Okay, we're synced and everything?
Okay, God, I'm horribly nervous. I'm really bad at this.
Oh, me too.
I studied photography, and I have no idea what
you
I'm
seem to
doing.
Be no, like. You seem like you know what you're doing.
It's because we edit the shit out of these because right. I fuck up every 5 minutes. That's how. Tim Heidecker, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
You had one of my favorite artists on the show, Adam Curtis.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Adam.
What's
Curtis.
What's your
yeah.
favorite Adam Curtis movie?
I think Hypernormalization and
it's a good
I think
one.
Bitter Lake and then Hypernormal. Those two, like Bitter Lake sets you up with other understanding, you know, the history of post-World War II, this, how the world got restructured.
Yeah.
And how power works. Beautifully made. He's a beautiful artist, sort of first and foremost, maybe. But in Hypernormalization, you get this theory that he presents, which I think is like the world has gotten so complicated. Mm-hmm. The way the world works has gotten so complicated that the people in charge have kind of lost the ability to really control it anymore.
Right.
No one really knows how anything works. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we're just going to distract people and present a sort of mirage of what happiness should be or what the future should be. And it's this challenge or this kind of throwing out this idea that we've lost the ability to present an idea for the future or what the future, what we should even be aspiring towards. And there's a great scene in that movie where Patti Smith is walking around downtown New York. And downtown New York at that time had been kind of decimated and it was just, you know, bombed out or just burned out buildings and graffiti everywhere and things falling apart. And she's walking around, and not to single her out, this was a whole movement that is still going on today, but it's sort of, look at the beautiful detritus of this building. Look how cool this is. You know, look how the graffiti, it's like so fucking, you know, so like cool, you know, and it's like, oh, we got sold this idea that like these crumbling ruins are actually cool. And this is what's real. And we shouldn't try to make this a better place, you know? And my parents were growing up, they had the Jetsons and they had the idea of flying cars and, you know, like living on other planets and traveling around the solar system. And like, I think that a lot of that has gotten stolen away or just whittled away or and that's kind of, you know, I don't do much to do this, but it is like Adam Curtis's movie, this Hypernormalization, really put that in my head of like, why I don't see anybody running for, I don't see anybody trying to present a vision for the future that is in any way interesting or exciting to me.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah, if I recall correctly, so I teach in an MFA program, and in the fall, at the end of the semester, I think it was right after the election, actually, coincidentally, we rewatched during the break. You have a 2-week break. And the origin of hypernormalization as a word, it comes from the end of the Soviet Union, when the society and the state were so dysfunctional, but everyone had to kind of pretend that it was still working.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you go through the motions, but you know that the society you're in now is in irreparable decline.
Sure.
Feels rather similar.
I mean, it's, you know, all we see now are mirages and, obviously, you can AI and deepfakes and all that stuff is a whole other level to it. But, you know, there's a million examples. But I don't know, how many days do you wake up and look at the news and read about some kind of ceasefire or some kind of agreement or some kind of kabuki theater of people pretending that things are happening when the next day there's some kind of drone strike that takes out a building? You know, you're like, what is any of this? Does anybody know what the hell's going on? Like, it's all just kind of seemingly like pretend time. And while the folks with the most are kind of just, you know, hiding, squirreling away their, you know, their fortunes or making plans to head to New Zealand or whatever.
In their bunkers,
Wait out,
Yeah. You did a Trump album as yeah. well. I wanted to ask you, how do you choose these figures that you're going to parody?
Well, I have a big board with a bunch of headshots, and I study them carefully. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I respect the question. I'm sorry to be dismissive of it. There's just certain people that either bother me or I find fascinating. That I have some friends like Vic Berger or Greg Turkington or people that, you know, we share these people on through text messages or through conversations. Did you see this guy? You know, this whoever it is, you know, and there's just people are fascinating to me, and some are interesting. I mean, and it's usually just like I did on that Trump album. I did a song called Wilbur Ross, and Wilbur Ross was a guy that fascinated me because he was, and he looked really funny because he was this looked like a turtle, you know. He was very old. He just looked like a villain, you know. And he was a villain. He would go and like buy, I think he bought Bethlehem Steel where we grew up and shut her down. He was one of those guys that would come in and vampire capitalist kind of guy. And he had a quote, there was a quote about him having these monogrammed $500 slippers that he wore all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And those things get in my head and I sit down and I write, Wilbur Ross puts his slippers on $500 at a time, just like the rest of, you know. Like that just became an interesting way to look at these people to me. And so it just, yeah, it's hard to say what triggers those things with me or what sparks them. I shouldn't say triggers because I'm not triggered by anything.
Be careful, careful about
not
that
not triggered
one.
By anything.
Well, it's a product of long debates now, not to be too snooty about this, but there's a big conflict in museum culture, deaccessioning things from the canon because the history of art is Eurocentric. And so in some cases, there's a scarce amount of resources and people have debates about, well, we have, you know, we have 100 Monets. Can we sell one of them and buy some other stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
So these are, yeah, these
I
are.
I mean, I'm open to all kinds of discussion about this stuff, but just know you pull a thread, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna unravel, and that could be fine, you know. Like I was all for taking down statues of, you know, heroes of the South of the Civil War, because it's sort of like, well, this is a monument, and the idea that this is a way to learn history is bullshit.
Also, the
you could
specific
read a book
history,
about that.
The Daughters of the Confederacy that put up those specific
monuments.
Yeah,
that was
like,
I mean,
that was like what, like 30
in the 50s,
years ago?
Yeah, it was as a reaction to the Civil Rights Movement. So that's I made a joke. It's like, you used to have statues so you could literally see what these people looked like. You know, because there wasn't photographs. There wasn't books that had, you know. So it's like, yeah, you don't need these statues. But that's an extreme example. But that's interesting about museums. I mean, how many natural history museums or world history museums are full of just stolen artifacts or just
it's
crap like that?
It's a huge conversation.
I don't know. Do we need this? Can we just, like, why do you need zoos? Can we have 3D models of orangutans and put, you know, like, that's the kind of the Adam Curtis idea of presenting a radical vision for the future, that so much of our daily life is just rooted in 18th, 19th, 20th century ideas of how to live and how we structure society. And any place where we can break some of those models, I'm open to that for sure. What does he say about the tariffs on the movie industry? That's probably going to go away.
How is that going to work precisely?
Well, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. And, you know, again, I'm not any kind of expert on any of this stuff, so like, please understand, I don't know what I'm talking about.
I've asked a few people who are in like the movie business of like, does that mean they have to build a Tokyo set in California? Or like, how does this, like, what if it gets distributed from France?
No one
film
knows.
Festival?
And John Voight's got it under control.
Good.
you'll see the documents soon.
A while ago, someone sent you a package of Phalum gum.
Of what?
Phalum gum.
Phalum gum.
Yeah, you remember this very hard gum?
Yeah. Is that you?
I don't know who it was. I was going to ask if you remembered, because I think it was somebody from our Discord.
Okay. It was like a flavorless gum.
Yes. Hard, mastic gum. Yeah. It tastes like plants.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they use it for like mewing, for building up your jaw muscles.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember who? No one would cop to it.
I don't remember who it was. Okay. I'm sure somebody on my team does.
could you find the address to like reverse trace it?
Yeah, I can look. I'll look into that for you.
Are you now, or have you ever been, a member of the Democratic Socialists of America?
You know, it's on my Wikipedia, I think.
Yes.
I, in the early days of the Trump administration, I was supportive of the DSA and went to a couple meetings. I never think I joined. I feel very much like I'm in front of, what's his name, McCarthy. I'm going to get expelled from the country. I like a lot of what they do. I didn't really get too involved, you know. I just thought, well, what they're doing on a local grassroots level and communities, and they do a lot of great community service. And you know, I'm sure there are things I would disagree with them about, but their organizing and their general approach to how to try to structure a more equitable society is in line with what I think.
I think we would each agree that we need some type of organizational structure outside of the Democratic Party proper.
Yeah. Well, yeah, or like reform that party in the way that Trump reformed the Republican Party.
Yes.
You know, clear
why,
it all
why
out.
Why is that take so unpopular right now?
To stay within the Democratic Party, but reform it or rebrand it or rebuild it in a different...
Like the Republicans were these free market evangelists, right? That was uncompromising, like Chicago School economics. You couldn't violate those rules. And then this like wrecking ball guy comes in, all of a sudden they're economic protectionists, they're non-interventionists, isolationists.
Yeah. Like on a dime.
Cosplay as him even.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
He just totally reoriented their priorities.
Well, I mean,
it's the same institution.
This
Why
is
can't
a,
that happen with the Democrats?
It potentially could, because I don't think you could have predicted that it would happen to the Republicans.
Right.
I think I don't know that much about this, but I think Republicans are a bit more disciplined when it comes to getting under the falling in line.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And the Democratic Party may be just too diverse in terms of the types of people that fall under that tent. And and Trump is a 1,000-year flood sort of personality, I think.
Right.
You know, I don't know if we're probably just a luck of the draw that we don't have somebody that charismatic you know, this perfect storm sort of guy.
Yeah, I mean, well, we did have someone that charismatic, and they
Obama?
Organized every, yeah, Bernie.
Bernie,
they organized every resource in the world to shut him down.
But I think he was too small.
Hmm. He didn't have a Sheldon Adelson.
Idiosyncratic. But yeah, and just didn't have the money and probably I don't know, that's good. He could have been, but I mean, we had Obama, but that was very like surface level stuff,
right.
Hope and change and things that were not very structural. They were kind of like just aspirational, good vibes kind of thing, which I bought into. Yeah. I mean, I was like excited about that.
No, we all believed
it
at the time.
And then you saw the results of that and it was kind of like, oh, that didn't really amount to much.
Yeah. Could we spend a moment on the environment that you grew up in?
Yeah.
Because there has been this kind of drift in mainstream culture. So let's talk about maybe the home, the environment that you grew up in, and then like some of these early creative and particularly music scenes where people get introduced to a lot of politics.
Mm-hmm.
If you can tell us a bit about your background.
I went to school in Philadelphia, and there was a very vibrant punk DIY, you know, verging on communist kind of subculture there.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. This is Joshua Citarella. What you just heard is an excerpt from this week's bonus episode. If you want to hear more and get access to the full catalog for Doomscroll and other podcasts, you can support the show on Patreon or Substack, where I'm putting out new episodes every week. This is an independent show. I don't do any advertising, so your support is really what keeps this project going. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.